Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. My guest today is Kermit Baker, Chief Economist for the American Institute of Architects. Kermit has spent decades analyzing business and construction trends and their impact on our profession. He originated the AIA's Work on the Boards survey and the widely followed Architecture Billings Index. And he coordinates the AIA Consensus Construction Forecast Panel with deep expertise from his work at Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies and the AIA. Kermit is here to help us make sense of today's uncertain economy and what it means for small firm architects. Kermit Baker, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, great to be with you today.
It's great to have you here. You and I have bumped into each other many, many times at AIA events and things like that, but this is the first time we've actually had a formal conversation. I'm really excited to share it with my audience, so thank you.
Great, terrific, thank you.
Before we jump right into the economy and the things that you are an expert at, I'd love to learn more about you. I don't really know much about your background. When did you discover your passion for what you do, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Sure. I have advanced degrees in urban planning with sort of an economics focus, and I worked for almost 10 years in the trade publishing business, providing economic information for publications that focused on the construction industry. The CEO of the company I worked at left the company, and about a year later, turned up as the CEO of the American Institute of Architects. And he said, we really need to add an economics function to our national staff. Are you interested in joining me in doing that? And I said, love to have the opportunity. It sounds like a terrific idea and a terrific way to see, get more engaged. Because I was up in Boston and the AIA obviously is in DC. It created a bit of a logistical challenge. And when I talked to the CEO, he said, well, feel free to find space up in Boston and you could telecommute. This was in 1995, so a bit ahead of its time in terms of working remotely. But in looking for space, I stopped by a research center at Harvard University that I had worked at when I was a doctoral student, the Joint Center for Housing Studies, asked if I could have some space there. And they said, no, but if you want to work on a project for us, happy to provide space. And the project's only going to take part of your time, so feel free to do what else you want with the rest of it. And the rest of it was the AIA, and that continued for almost 30 years now, Mark. So it's been a good run.
Yeah, you've been there a long time. You have helped guide our expectations and management of the economy for architects for decades. And so first, before we even get started, I wanted to say thank you for doing that.
Well, appreciate that. And architects, I think, are a very willing audience to talk about sort of business conditions and business conditions that where they might be headed and how that might affect their own firm. So it's been an easy sell so far.
Yeah. We've experienced many, many different economic conditions throughout the years. We've had recessions, we've had boom times. This current environment, economic environment, is a very unique situation, I think. I've been practicing for over 30 years, and it's a very interesting experience right now. My community is telling me very mixed messages. Some of them are thriving and have so much work, they don't know what to do with it. And there's others who are struggling and don't know where the next paycheck's going to come from. And so I wanted to invite you on the show to sort of help us understand what's going on right now in the economy. So why don't we start with the beginning? What are some of the trends that we're seeing currently, and what do they mean for small firms?
Let me back up just a little bit, Mark. You mentioned you've seen many economic cycles in your career, and I think that's true. In the 30 years we've been tracking business conditions at architecture firms, we've gone through some fairly major cycles. In the early 2000s, it was the dot-com recession. Not too serious for architecture firms, but reasonably serious for the economy. And then 2008, obviously, the Great Recession, the global financial crisis that hit everything, but it particularly hit design and construction very hard. Then we went through the pandemic, and that was unique in a lot of ways. And as you said, now we're entering this new period, or well into this new period, and it's unique also. But I think the point is that every economic cycle we go through is unique. And fortunately, this one is not as severe as some prior ones. And so, as you say, some firms are feeling it, some firms aren't. It's been a very mild but prolonged and unclear as to what's going on. I mean, when the global financial crisis hit, we knew what was happening there. When the pandemic hit, we knew what was happening there. I think there's a lot of confusion now as to what is happening now and when's it going to stop, or when are things going to get better kind of across the board, or you know, what's the future look like? There's just a lot of uncertainty going on out there as to what conditions are going to be like next quarter, next year. And that makes it very challenging to do planning if you don't know what the world's going to look like, what the economy's going to look like in 6, 9, 12 months.
Yeah, I think that uncertainty is something that makes people afraid. And when people are afraid, they freeze.
Exactly, exactly. I think architects, like anyone else in the economy, can plan around a situation if they know what to plan around. But now it's very much what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen next week, what's going to happen next month. And that's challenging. That's challenging, particularly if you're trying to make these big decisions. Gee, should we be adding staff? Should we be opening up a new office? Those are very challenging decisions if you don't know what the future looks like.
What are you seeing in your surveys in the first three quarters of 2025? How are we currently looking in the economy, and what does it look like in the final quarter here?
It continues to be uncertain. Now, some of that is, you know, things like tariffs and immigration policy and federal spending and federal employment, things like that, that, you know, we do have some control over, at least theoretically, and therefore can look at them. I think there's other things that are happening now. We've just recently got a couple very bad jobs report that indicates that the economy really is slowing pretty substantially. So we have some combination of policy initiatives that seem to change day by day, week by week, coupled with what, you know, 6 months ago, even 3 months ago, looked like a pretty healthy economy, pretty strong economy. We just needed to keep inflation in check. But now I think we're starting to question that too. You know, how strong is the economy? What is the outlook? We're starting to hear the R word, recession, kicked around a lot more often in terms of, is this going to continue to ease? And are we going to see more serious conditions moving forward than we're seeing now? So we've got uncertainty in a lot of different fronts now.
Our community here at Entree Architect are primarily small firms. We do a lot of residential work. I've heard several times in the last few weeks, very unique situation where architects working with contractors that they've worked with for years, who've been very, very reliable on their service side, slipping on their services, right? Not as dependable as they once were. And we were speculating, and we don't really have any numbers to back it up, but we were wondering if, because of inflation and the increase in material costs, could it be that contractors are sort of trying to save on the human side, on the service side, in order to compensate for some of the issues on the building material side? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I haven't heard that as much, Mark, but it does sort of make sense. And I think maybe a better explanation is, since they have to pay more for materials, or by extension have to pay more for labor, that they're trying to cut back in other areas. But I'm guessing it goes back to the theme we were just talking about, which is the uncertainty. It's not that I'm going to pay more for materials necessarily. It's I don't know how much I'm going to be paying for materials. I don't know if they're going to be available or not. I don't know how serious of a labor shortage we might have moving forward, if contracts are going to be able to hire workers to keep on schedule. And I think in that environment, they tend to step back and hedge their bets a little bit and play things more conservatively. I've heard a lot of stories about contractors that 3 or 4 years ago would estimate a project was going to take, 24 months for construction. And now they may be bidding it at 30 months because they just don't know what's happening. And as I said, don't know if they can get the materials they need for that, in addition to how much they're going to be paying for those. So I think in that environment, you do tend to step back a little bit, hedge your bets a little bit. And it doesn't surprise me that architects might feel like they're not getting the attention or not getting the information that they used to get, because I think the contractor isn't sure what the future looks like and not sure what information to provide to their architects.
Yeah, I can imagine that tariffs are probably having a big impact on that, whether it's real impact or whether it's perceived impact. Are you seeing any impact in the numbers, any effect in the numbers from tariffs yet? Has it been long enough to know the impact that the tariffs have on construction?
Well, it's long enough to know that we're seeing something, but I think, again, it's what does that mean in 3 to 6 months from now?
Right.
Let me explain it this way. I think that, the Department of Labor does track what they call producer price indicators, which are the price of goods. And they are, I would say, on a year-to-year basis, somewhere around 3%. Most of that happening, obviously, since the beginning of the year. 3% is not a lot. I think that the industry could absorb that pretty well. And I think the reason it's stayed so low is that manufacturers and dealers don't know what the long-term effect will be. And if they think that these might go away or might be reduced, they don't want to pass them along to their customers and risk losing their customers if it's not really an issue. And so I think they're trying to keep the impact as minimal as possible for the time being. But if it became clear that, hey, these 20, 30, 40% tariffs are going to remain in place, I'm going to have to raise my prices. And I'm going to have to raise my prices more than I have so far. And so, we could see more of that moving forward. On the other hand, as I said, if tariffs were to kind of evaporate or something, then, we wouldn't see much change at all. So, again, getting back to the theme of this discussion, the uncertainty about what the future looks like.
Yeah, certainly it goes right back to uncertainty. So with that in mind, we're talking to small firms. Is there anything that small firms could and should be doing to prepare for an uneven or delayed project pipeline? In terms of things that have happened in the past, what should we be doing today to prepare for more uncertainty?
Yeah, well, I think there's just much more need for information, Mark, in this environment. And let's talk about the different dimensions of information that might be helpful. Number one is materials pricing. So I encourage architects to, for any project they're working on, to identify what the key materials are and then what's the risk associated with that. Simple example, wood to build a home. How much wood is imported? Where is it imported from? What's the risk of price hikes there? That's a pretty easy case. 20% of lumber in the U.S. is imported. A majority of that is imported from Canada. Track to see what the relationships are in terms of imports with Canada to see what the exposure is, how much is covered by the under the old U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreements, what's not covered, and what does that mean? Kind of what's the worst case scenario for this? What's the most likely case scenario for that? That helps me sort of figure out what the cost of that project might be. And so if my client wants a $5 million structure built, does that mean kind of that should be, what I would design for $4.5 million a year or two ago, because I'm likely to see some price in, they're likely to see some price hikes as they get into the construction phase. That's number one. The other dimension is labor, I guess. Is that going to affect the contractors' scheduling, and is that going to affect how much time I'm going to have to spend on construction administration and other sorts of things? I need to factor that in also. And then, what does the economy look like? Is this going to proceed ahead as scheduled, or is there enough risk that there might be serious delays associated with it? That's going to affect me too. Is there some risk that we're going to get into this and it's going to be canceled or abandoned, this project, because it just doesn't pencil out anymore? So I think all those dimensions are important. And probably number one on the list that kind of summarizes all this is having more frequent discussions with clients about what they're thinking on things. What are they seeing? What are they nervous about? What can I do to help them get through this time? What information can I provide to them? And that'll give, I think, architects a much better sense of what's the future look like? What am I exposed to here? How much risk am I taking on this project? And I think those are things that, you know, we haven't really needed to focus on historically. I mean, we probably should have, but things go smoothly. You don't spend a lot of time, you know, sitting down regularly with the client and saying, how are things going? Anything new since I talked to you last time? Anything about this issue about materials or labor? Let's focus a little bit more on, you know, exactly how you're seeing this and what I can do to help you out on that. And as I said, we should have been doing all along, but I think it really is critical now to start focusing more on that.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, RCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the Resources tab, or just go to rcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcatemy. That's rcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. It's very interesting to hear you talk about materials and educating ourselves on the cost of materials as architects. Right, obviously, costs are always part of our equation, but never really had to research the impact of our current economy on different building materials. When you said that, I thought to myself, there's a greater importance in selection of materials, right? If you're going to build a building in steel versus concrete versus wood, understanding how the economy and what's happening in the economy impacts those different types of materials really could have a huge difference in the building cost and the construction cost of the buildings you're designing.
Yeah, and passing that information on to your contractor clients and saying, let me tell you sort of what risk you're exposing yourself to by going this route. And let me describe the different alternatives and what the pluses or minuses should be. That's something we're good at. That's something we should do pretty well. That's information that's available that we can supply. And we now may know even better than the contractor about the ramifications of that. So again, kind of exerting ourselves as the professional, as the expert in making these decisions.
Looking into the next few months, maybe throughout the next year, what indicators should architects, specifically small firm architects, be looking at? What indicators should they be looking at?
There are classes of these, Mark, and let me talk through some of them. Number one is information that they would uniquely see, that their firm would see. So we at the AIA, when we track our monthly architecture billings index, we also track two other indicators. One is what we call new design contracts. That's basically new projects coming into firms. And number two is inquiries, which is just some indication, soft or hard, that someone might be interested in a project somewhere down the road. Now, I'm guessing that most firms at least qualitatively track those things, but I would say maybe a little more quantitatively, maybe looking a bit more seriously at, you know, how much new work is coming in and what your hit rate is and how does that compare over time? What kinds of inquiries am I getting for future work? Would I consider those to be serious or kind of hopeful discussions? What does it suggest in terms of what work I'm likely to see over the next three, six, nine months? Secondly, what I encourage folks to do is track broader economic indicators, things like we talked about inflation, job growth, consumer sentiment, interest rates. But I think particularly for small firms, it's probably not that useful to track those at the national level. It's, you know, what is the market that you think is your market area? Is it your town or city? Is it the Northeast? Whatever it is, you know, then track those indicators. Who are the big employers in the area I serve? How comfortable are they feeling about prospects for their company? Because they hire a lot of folks, and those are folks are potentially future clients. So you want to know what they're feeling, you know, and other things that might suggest what's going on in my market area. And it could be very different than what you're hearing nationally. I mean, you may hear kind of the economy that seems to be tanking, but your market may be very strong because you've got a couple of high-tech clients out there. You've got a couple colleges or universities that support the economy in your area. You've got some major healthcare facilities that provide a steady base of employment. So it's really watching the things that matter for your potential client pool, I think, moving forward and what they're seeing.
What's the best way to do that? Is that basically getting involved in local community organizations, reading local business news? What's the best way to keep track of your local economy?
Yeah, all of the above. When you say getting involved in local organizations, that seems like a heavy lift just to kind of track what's going on. But on the other hand, right, might be a really effective way to network so that when someone is thinking of a project, they think of you. But I think, you know, local online or print newspapers, newsletters are going to provide some insight on that. I think that information is available at a fairly modest investment of time and a very modest investment of cost. I think it's just kind of committing to, I'm going to spend 30 minutes a week sort of just tracking down in terms of some good solid indicators that tell me about the direction of the market that I serve, and use that to then, you know, kind of sit down with folks and do a little strategic analysis of that. What does that mean in terms of likely future work for us? Does that mean we should start focusing on a different sector? Is that we should kind of expand our market area a little bit? How should we respond to those signals that we're seeing? And certainly having a bit of an alert that, you know, things are moving in this direction and we may want to change course a little bit is very helpful rather than reacting after the fact, which is very challenging to do effectively.
The AIA's Architecture Billing Index, which you are the creator and manager of, there's some regional content, regional information there that we could use as well. But specifically small firms, what's the best way to use some of that information that you're creating at AIA on a regular basis? Should we be looking at that? And if we are looking at it, how should we use it best to have an impact on our firm?
I think the whole purpose of the Architecture Billings Index effort is to kind of get a sense as to what our peers are seeing. We know with minimal effort how to evaluate how our firm is doing, but you know, if we're seeing a spike in work, does that mean everyone else in the area is seeing the same spike? It's just that we've seen this burst of economic activity, or does it mean we're doing something particularly effectively that our peers may not be seeing, and therefore we need to continue to do that, or we need to continue to invest in areas that reach out more than maybe our competition is doing. And so I think it provides useful perspective on interpreting what we're seeing. We know how much business we have, we know how much work is coming into our firm, but we don't know if that's typical or something unique to us. And so I think it helps provide that perspective, that context of, gee, what are other folks doing? You know, it's like sitting down with a peer group every month and everyone going around and saying, this is what I'm seeing out there. That, you know, I think the information we collect allows you to do that much more effectively than other options that you might be considering.
Yeah, and listeners can find all of that, the Architecture Billing Index, all the surveys at AIA.org. Just search for it on the website and you'll find it. Looking into the future, I know that you continue to do the Architecture Billing Index. You have some other industry reports. Is there anything else that we should be looking for in the future in terms of information coming from AIA?
Yeah, there's several other things that I think might be helpful, Mark. One is particularly for the residentially focused firms. And as you mentioned, a lot of small firms do focus on the residential market. We do a separate survey called the Home Design Trends Survey. Now, a large part of that is really qualitative design aspects of that. What kinds of homes are becoming more popular? What kinds of features? What kind of technology? But we also do a business conditions aspect of that too, where, you know, for example, in our home design trends survey, we actually break the market down into seven sectors, two related to remodeling. One is sort of additions and alterations. One is kitchen and bath. And then five new construction sectors, entry-level housing, move-up housing, custom and luxury housing, townhouses and condos, and second homes. And we ask all of the participants in that survey, of any of the seven sectors that you work in, tell us if you feel that, you know, work is sort of picking up, slowing down, or remaining constant. And so what we've seen there is, you know, the overall residential market in most regions and certainly across the country is pretty flat at best. You know, it's been very challenging, but there are segments that are doing quite well. Mortgage rates are high. That hurts a lot of folks, but, you know, at the custom and luxury level, they're focused more on stock prices than they are on interest rates because they're mortgage rates because they're likely to be a cash buyer. And turns out the stock market's been doing pretty well. So the custom and luxury segment has been doing quite well, for example, too, even though the entry level sector has been doing very poorly. So I think breaking it down, as architects need to do, and in terms of not what does construction look like, but what does construction in the areas I'm focusing on look like. And, you know, another example is that of the, so I mentioned those seven sectors that we track, it turns out the two remodeling sectors are actually quite healthy, and the five new construction sectors vary between kind of modestly slow to really very slow. And so which ones am I focusing on with my firm and how are they doing? One other indicator, going back to our last discussion, Mark, that I failed to mention, which I should have, is that in addition to the indicators I mentioned, we also track backlogs, how much work firms have at house, in-house. And that's a very important indicator for how solid they are if conditions were to weaken moving forward. And that's, I think, a particularly important variable for small firms, because small firms, by and large, have much lower backlogs than large firms. They're working on smaller projects. They're working on projects that turn over more quickly. So nationally, for example, architecture firms are reporting backlogs of about six and a half months. Pretty nice level. Also, another encouraging sign is that really hasn't changed that much over the last 2 or 3 years, even though we've had weak architecture billings index scores, backlogs have been constant. Small firms have backlogs about half that, you know, 3.5, 4 months maximum. Large firms have backlogs about double that, 8, 9, 10 months. And so for small firms in particular, they just don't have that work in-house that's going to sustain them if things got worse. If I'm a large firm now, I say, well, I care a little bit about 2026, maybe middle of the year on to the end of the year. I don't care so much about the next 6 months because I got plenty of work in-house to cover that. Small firms, not so much. If things turn south on them, they're going to, you know, work through their backlog very quickly, and therefore they need to respond much faster. Being a small firm, they often have the ability to respond faster, but it does mean they need to have their finger in the wind a little bit earlier, I think, in terms of, gee, is something shifting here that I should be paying attention to?
Yeah, you've been doing this work for, as we mentioned, many, many years. You've seen lots of ups and downs. You understand architects and how they work and the opportunities they have. I wanted to ask the final question that I ask all my guests. I think that you would have a very unique perspective to answer this question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think it's really trying to figure out what you are and what your competitive advantages are, Mark. And I think firms kind of know that, but don't think about that entirely. You know, what's unique in terms of the niche of the market I serve? And that could be, I only serve an area within 20 miles of our firm, you know, and I know all those clients very well there and know what's going on. I'm the first on the list if they're looking for a project. Another thing might be is I'm a specialty firm. I just work on fire hardening new homes that are built, and I might provide my services nationally through other firms to provide that information. And so it really is, who am I? What do I do well? How can I make sure I continue doing that well? And how can I focus on what I believe my competitive advantage is?
His name is Kermit Baker. The organization, as we all know, American Institute of Architects, AIA.org is where you can learn more about the Institute, as well as all of the reports and surveys that we talked about today, AIA.org. Kermit, thank you very much for your dedication to helping architects understand the economy. We're not typically very focused on the economy as architects. We're not always focused on the numbers. It's nice to have someone like you to be able to analyze the way the economy works and then communicate that in a way that we can understand. So thank you for the decades of dedicating yourself to our community of architects. And thanks for coming by here and sharing your knowledge today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Great. Well, thanks, Mark. Pleasure to be with you today.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, 2 a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember 3 words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.